I see it. I see the 1 second.
Seems to be 1 second for Wellington.
So you're not representing the Marshall Foundation here?
Yeah, I do. That's right. Good. They could have somebody else tomorrow. Yeah.
Okay. I think it's running. Yeah. It's okay. It's on. Okay. This is
I did all the zoning for this.
Okay. I'm putting
I wasn't
on.
Paid either.
I'm putting it on record now. We're on the record now. Okay. This is Thursday, July 31st, 2014. The time currently is 2:14 p.m. This is a meeting of the Main Gate Design Review Committee. The discussion has to do with 714 North Euclid Avenue. And with that, I'll take a roll call, and then I'll turn the meeting over to Rick Gonzalez, the design professional. Jim Chaffee?
Here.
Rick Gonzalez?
Here.
Noah Sensabaugh?
Here.
Bob Smith?
Here.
Tom Warren?
Here.
Jan Cervelli? Absent. Jane McCollum? Absent, but on her way, as far as we know.
Right.
With that, we have a quorum of the Design Review Committee. And Rick, I'll turn over to you for item number two.
Okay, welcome everyone. We'll start with the approval of the legal action of the June 25th meeting. Has everyone had a chance to review the notes for that?
Yeah.
The report. All in favor? I'm sorry, would anybody like to make a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll move to approve them.
Okay.
And
that was Bob motion with Jim's second.
And unanimously approved.
Okay.
And we have Bob Vint here to make a presentation on the proposed hotel mixed-use design for 714 North Euclid Avenue. Please proceed, Bob.
Thank you, Rick. And this is our first meeting with your group. And we're at a stage in the development of the project where we are going through historic preservation zone review. Because, as you are aware, there are existing on this particular site four existing listed historic properties. And we've made our application through the City of Tucson Development Services through the Main Gate District overlay, but that doesn't remove the historic designation from the property. So we were directed by city staff to go through two parallel processes, one of which was the historic preservation review, and then the other was the Main Gate design standards. Now, so we're not at a point of completion where we're picking out light fixtures and plant types, because we still don't know whether the project will go ahead until mayor and council determine whether we have permission to demolish the historic structures. So we're in a different phase of design than you're probably used to seeing. We will be back before you if the project goes ahead, but the HPZ process requires a public hearing before mayor and council, at which mayor and council will vote yay or nay as to whether we can go forward. So if there's a no vote, we would not go hire civil engineers and lighting designers and landscape architects to develop a full set of plans. So what you see here is a schematic design of an architectural concept that is illustrated to a degree of accuracy and scale and representation.
Do you have another copy?
I sure do. Yes, I'm sorry. Rather than have big boards at a distance on easels, I thought I'd furnish each board member with, or committee member rather, with a reduced scale set. They are at an inch to 20 foot scale, so they are scale drawings. We are working within the confines of our site. We're proposing a zero lot line development, which matches the historic Geronimo Hotel to the north. But I'll take you through some images here that illustrate our concept, and then we can. I'll take questions, and I fully expect questions. We've been through the HPZ process, so to speak. We've met with the West University Historic Zone Advisory Board, of which Noah, I believe you're also a member of that currently, because we're actually within the confines of the West University Historic Zone. So looking at this aerial photo here, our site is at the northeast corner of Euclid and 4th Street. We're adjacent to the Tyndall Garage, and we're also right across Euclid from the historic context of West University, these little bungalow homes. And as you know, the City of Tucson Planning Department has created this transition zone from the historic neighborhood to the university because of the fact that there's so many university-oriented activities. I can tell right now that the screen is exaggerating our proportion. It's wider than it should be. And I'm wondering if there's a way we can fix that so that it's not distorted. I don't know how to do it. Let's see.
I don't know how to do it.
Hi, Jane. Is there a library staff person who might be able to adjust it? Because proportions are kind of important in architecture, and everything's going to be stretched. Okay, so anyway, the details of our project are that we are proposing a mixed-use design, a hotel.
Can we hold on? Sure. Just for the record, Jane McCollum has entered at 2:20 p.m.
This is the first slide, Jane.
Great.
I'm just sort of discussing the context. And the scope of work is proposing a hotel above retail. The hotel will have 140 rooms, approximately, plus or minus one or two, above approximately 8,500 square feet of retail, although we've been recently looking at ways to increase the area of retail. And as this project moves forward, we will be back with a revised site plan. But that's the goal of the project. We have a small site. It's not quite two-thirds of an acre. It is in the university context. Of course, we know we are also within the boundary of West University Historic District, which comes across here to Park Avenue to include the Lutheran Church and Park. It was designed by one of the Sunt brothers back in the 20s. Then comes up here to university, encompasses the Geronimo Hotel, Geronimo Court, and then goes back across Euclid. It comes up across here to include these bungalows, where 20 years ago when I started my office, I rented one of these little bungalows. So I'm familiar with this context. But as you know, the zone is in transition. We're also near the streetcar line that comes right down University. Here's our site. We're a half a block from the streetcar. And we feel it would be an appropriate location for a hotel to serve the university and the downtown area. And my client, Mike Golek, is present here down the road from our neighbor to the north. And working on developing this project to create a higher and better use for the land. As you see, it's in this context of nine-story dormitories, six-story dormitories, four-story housing for students, 10-story hotel, five-story parking garage. It really is part of the university context, cut off from the historic neighborhood by four lanes of a very busy arterial street. Looking east from Euclid, you see the Tyndall Avenue garage, you see the La Aldea housing, which is four stories, and the historic corner property. There's La Aldea, built about 10 years ago. Looking south, you see the Tyndall garage, five stories of precast concrete with a brick facade. Now, we've, again, as I mentioned, we went through neighborhood review, and we also went to the Tucson Theme Historic Commission. Seeking their findings on our case. Okay, we're going to try to adjust the screen proportion. Yeah.
That looks how it normally looks.
Well, what's happened is it's stretched horizontally to fill the whole screen because it's a wide screen, but the slides actually shouldn't fill the whole screen because it stretches everything so it looks wider than it is.
Yeah.
Is there a setting?
Not that we are aware of. Sometimes people get, we just came in, we turned on the, we know how to turn it on and off on the pad and the volume.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We don't use it.
There's probably a setting.
Oops, display sign.
There you go.
Oh, there you go. Good job.
Perfect.
I just pushed a button at random.
Yeah.
Not a random button, though.
But you did that very well.
A button at random.
Great.
Okay, thank you so much. It wouldn't have happened had you not come in. That's just great. Thank you. All right, now I'm more proportional. Okay. So anyway, our meeting for the neighborhood, we started very early, last October, actually. Six or eight people from the neighborhood met at my office to look at our preliminary design and had some comments on it. At that time, the neighbors were glad to hear that we were talking about a hotel, not more student housing. They felt a hotel might actually be an amenity for the neighborhood, that when their friends or relatives came to visit, they might be able to stay at this hotel. They liked the idea of ground floor retail, with a preference for a locally owned retailer. At this point, we don't know who the tenant will be because we don't know if we have a building or not. But I know my clients have been scouting and looking out for who they might lease the tenant space to when it comes to that point.
Bob, how did the two entities that you met with under the HBC zoning, how did they vote?
Very interesting. We got a split vote from the neighborhood. The neighborhood voted to recommend against allowing the demolition, so thumbs down the demolition. But they ended up approving the replacement plan, which is the design concept, if demolition went ahead.
For it to occur.
I
think that's not really a fair representation of.
Because you're on the board, right? Yeah.
He is the chair, I think. Right?
I'm acting chair. I'm supposed to be resigning as soon as someone replaces me.
That'll be 3 years from now. somebody will step up.
I'm not there for a long. Basically, the feeling of, this is interesting actually, Bob keeps calling it the West University Historic Zone. It's actually the West University Historic Preservation Zone.
Right.
There's a P in there. Okay. But because our purpose is to preserve the historic structures in the neighborhood.
Right.
As the Historic Preservation Zone, we can never support demolition of historic structures. So we voted against the demolition of historic structures. At that point, there were motions to just vote against the proposed building. Mm-hmm. And it was pointed out to us by city staff that if we wanted any input into this building, we needed to review those plans at that meeting then, because if we just voted against it, we were basically saying we're giving up any input into that building.
Oh.
So under duress, we reviewed the plans,
right,
and voted on, you know, modification. If we had to accept this building.
Right, if it came
if
to
this
that
building
point.
Was rammed down the neighborhood's throat,
right,
then these are what we would like to see. These are the modifications.
Right.
Under no circumstances should it be represented that the West University Historic Preservation Board, mm-hmm, Zone Board, wanted to see this building built on this site.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. Then it went to the City County Board afterwards with the...
We actually had two joint meetings with the West University Historic Zone Advisory Board, known as WUZAB,
okay,
and the Tucson Pima Historic Commission, and so that the discussion could include everyone. And there are legal action reports that came out of those meetings in which we did listen to what the neighbors had to say, and we responded and modified the design in response to that. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, we did have an acceptance, not an approval, an acceptance of the revised design by WUZAB. The Tucson Pima Commission had two separate votes to make also, one having to do with the demolition request, one having to do with the replacement plan, because the city has wisely linked those two. You can't get a demolition permit unless you show what you're going to put in place of what's there. We actually got a thumbs up from Tucson Pima Commission on the demolition request and on the replacement plan. So those legal action reports will be forthcoming, and they will be in the packet that goes to mayor and council for the public hearing. So the mayor and council knows the background. And the Historic Preservation Commission of Tucson Pima voted on the basis of the economic hardship of restoring these neglected properties, which were purchased by my client, three years ago? But the buildings were built in the mid-1930s, and over the past 30 years have had a history of neglect. And we found in the city archive reports from city inspectors threatening to demolish the buildings and present the owner with a bill for the demolition if he didn't fix certain things. And this property owner tended to wait until things got so bad that he was being, you know, red tagged. Then he'd make whatever fixes were minimal enough to get the red tag removed. But there's a whole history of that stretching through the 70s, 80s, into the late 90s of the properties being said, this is dangerous, this is a dangerous building. You have 0 days to correct it or we will tear it down and give you the bill. So they have unfortunately been neglected. Now, this is the Geronimo Hotel, which is now offices. It was adaptively reused, as we would say. You do notice the modern streetcar tracks coming through at Euclid. Looking north, we see the Marshall Foundation building. We have the scale of, we do have an institutional scale of construction on Euclid existing. This is the first of the four buildings that we need to remove to build the new building. From the corner of the parking structure, looking northwest across Geronimo Court, in our thinking for the hotel design, we are not proposing a restaurant in the hotel. The hotel would be rooms, hotel rooms, some meeting rooms, conference space, no restaurant, no bar. It's basically a place to stay and have meetings. The Geronimo Court would be our forecourt, would be our courtyard. That's where folks would go for coffee or for meals or for drinks. So we're making use of an existing resource and bringing 140 customers in to the main gate district. And riders of the streetcar, because this hotel would be situated such that it could serve conferences at UMC, conferences downtown, families coming to visit the university. This would be the sequence coming from the modern streetcar through the Geronimo Court to the hotel lobby, essentially treating Geronimo Court as our front gateway to the hotel. Because it's a wonderful amenity and a historic building. Looking southeast from Euclid, we see a very heavily trafficked artery, major university buildings, housing, and there's the corner of our little building. Looking east from 5th Street, actually, from the neighborhood, you see the scale of the university is there. It exists. That's why West University neighborhood is called West University neighborhood. It's west of the university. The university is there. And admittedly, our proposed building is more on the scale of a university building than an historic bungalow in the neighborhood. They're two different animals. So we're proposing to relate to the institutional character of the university. Now these are the heights and story limits that were identified through the city planning process that along Euclid Avenue, the first 60 feet of depth should be limited to 4 stories not exceeding 56 feet in height. The remaining 90 feet of the property could go to 6 stories, not exceeding 84 feet in height. Here's Geronimo. And there's a cross section from Euclid Avenue to the Tyndall Garage showing our heights that are allowed. That's straight out of Main Gate. This would be the street elevation of Euclid going from 6th Street to University Boulevard, showing the existing office building of the Marshall Foundation.
It's not our office building.
Okay.
It belongs to the University,
right,
University Services building.
University Services, okay. Well, did Marshall have a hand in getting it built? Or?
Marshall sold the land to the university during the initial
perfect
redevelopment of that area.
Okay.
So you're not totally confused, but I want to clarify because there are buildings that are listed as university properties like Beckman Udall that belonged to the Marshall Foundation.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Okay. There's just a lot of confusion somewhere.
The university purchased the property, Board of Regents purchased the property, and then the university financed it and built it.
Okay.
Had it built.
Okay, yeah. Great. That's good to understand. Thank you. So here's Geronimo. Here's our proposed hotel at 4 and 6 stories. Here's the Tyndall Garage beyond, which is a 50-foot tall structure. La Aldea, and then Arbol de la Vida and Coronado Hall. So you can see we're in the mix, in the scale of that. Now here's a design concept. Because this site faces west, the building's gonna take a real beating from the sun. And I've been thinking actually for a long time about how do you design a west-facing building in Tucson and address the sun so you don't have excessive heat gain and glare. And so, and actually this was a concept I had learned from my teacher, Judith Chafee at U of A. 30 years ago, she said, and I remember distinctly because when Judith said something, you remembered it. that the south sun you handle in section with an overhang. The east and west you handle in plan, because the sun comes in as it sinks or rises and just burns right in. You can't handle the west sun with an overhang. So what I've proposed is to angle the west wall of the hotel room to block the afternoon sun in the summer, but admit the afternoon sun in winter when the sun is more desirable. And so that becomes the theory for the facade. Now this is actually, we've been through a couple of designs. I'll show you the first one that we proposed, and I'll show you where we ended up after our meetings with the neighborhood and how it evolved. Our concept was to leave a covered walkway along Euclid, off of which the retail would be accessed. In this concept, I was proposing to cantilever the canopy. The canopy would extend out from the building and sort of float above the walkway. Our property line has an offset, a 10-foot offset. It jogs back 10 feet, goes over 45, and then goes back and completes the rectangle. But what I'm proposing here was to actually preserve one of the historic buildings, which was the commercial storefront. And then our new retail would be adjacent to it. And then these are the exit stairs from the hotel beyond. And this would be the exit stair from this garage below, because we're talking about parking below grade on our site. So here's the hotel lobby relating across to Geronimo Court. Here's the new retail relating to Euclid and pedestrian circulation along Euclid Avenue. Cars arriving to the hotel would come in this way, drop their passengers off. We're now looking at another way to do this, where cars both enter and exit off of 4th Street. Mm-hmm. And then when, if you dropped a passenger off, you could circulate here and then come down the ramp here. Okay, right. And then we would lose this. This would all become service deliveries and trash recycling. So when we come back before you, which we know we will, we'll have a new site plan. And we're also getting advice from Kurt Lewick, our traffic consultant. So there's a layout of the garage where the ramp was located as you see it here. When we move the ramp over here, we're going to lose these parking spaces. But we can use that space for mechanical and other things. So, and we're also talking about going down two levels of parking beneath our building rather than one. So the concept of the building is you essentially have the classic donut scheme where the hallway circles around with rooms on both sides. There's a central courtyard. And here's our exit stairs here and here. You'll notice the exit stairs are located exactly at the 60-foot line from the street. So that's where we transition from 4 to 6 stories. And now we have a U-shaped hallway with a stair at each end. And the elevators are located here, and then there's the courtyard. So that's a Google Street View of the existing site and conditions, the Geronimo, the Tyndall Garage, and our little buildings, and the proposed replacement, where we were proposing a concrete platform or plinth-type building. There's the cantilevered walkway cover projecting out to cover the walkway. These were vertical louver fins to protect the glass at the retail. The retail would have a wall of glass here. And then here's the stair-stepping facade that was inspired by the saguaro cactus self-shading forms. A view, an aerial view of the proposed hotel with the garage adjacent, Euclid Avenue, 4th Street. We were proposing a rooftop pool here. Now, one of the comments we had from the neighbors was, we don't want like hotel residents up here, you know, partying and making noise. If there's, who knows, a wedding reception that's catered, we don't want that noise over our neighborhood. So one of the changes we've made is to slide the pool over as far as we can get it to here, and then wrap this green roof around so we keep people 10, 15 feet away from the parapet. And that will show in our later design. This is the first of two designs. A view of the central atrium bringing light into the middle of the hotel. We're on top of the commercial, so this is the second level, and then second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth stories. Now, here are the buildings that we have sought permission to demolish. There's a commercial building, two commercial bays, built in 1921, together with the Geronimo Hotel. It has been abandoned for the last many years and is in really, really rundown shape. It was leased, I believe, for storage by the university.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these buildings are the student apartments that keep getting red tagged The city zoning, or not city zoning, but city, yeah, I guess it's zoning. Zoning would red tag you, wouldn't they?
Police.
Or neighborhood development group.
It's actually a police, they serve the notice. Yeah, it's a legal notice. A view across our site looking towards downtown, a mountain, and this would be the view of our hotel rooms, southwesterly. Looking from the garage northwest, you see our buildings, and we're planning to preserve the existing vegetation and enhance it with additional planting. A view of the north side of these three two-story rental apartments, is essentially the 1930s version of student housing, similar to what's being built now in the 10 and 14 story range. Back in 35, they were two stories. They're really uncharacteristic of the rest of the neighborhood in that they're not the bungalow type construction that typifies West University. They're really university buildings. They have in the past been remodeled. Porches were enclosed, aluminum windows were used, which diminishes the historic character. Here is the little commercial storefront, which is, again, in rough shape, abandoned, run down. Yes, it's just, it is, as you see. My client has hired a civil engineer and a contractor to analyze the costs of renovating the buildings, and they've looked at the current appraised value of the properties, what it would cost to rehab them, what they'd have invested all up. And under the UDC 5.8.7, the HPZ does recognize there are circumstances where the condition of the property prevents a reasonable economic use. And that was the case that we made that was approved by the Tucson Pima Historic Commission. The architects on the board agreed that these numbers were quite reasonable. If anything, our numbers were probably conservatively low. May cost more to rehab the buildings because they don't have foundations. That if you go in the basement, it's just caliche and the brick comes down onto it and it's being eaten away, and you'd have to underpin every structure. And they looked at rehab costs, and they looked at taxes, and what they could reasonably expect to bring in on the property. So that's the expenses, and then the income.
Bob, just for the record, yes. Are you saying that those units, after the Moores purchased them and rehabbed them, because obviously the meters and so on in the back were new, you could tell by the picture, by the photo, that they've been red tagged in the last 2 years?
No, the last red tag was 1998.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, I just want to clarify, because the way you said it, it sounds like you said they're continuously being red tagged. So
they were for about 30 years.
Yeah, no, I remember the whole incident with the guns and Joe Valdez having a problem. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a whole thing. But I.
Well, you learn something new every day.
But so since 98, that was the last red tag, and the Moores purchased it more recently. Before
that's
the
right, because it was Russell Moore.
Russell Moore, right. So I just wanted to clarify. So the record didn't County show that it was continuously being red tagged.
I never made that connection in my head.
Yeah. You're right. And so for the last 15 or so years,
right.
And they're rented now. Peach Properties is managing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they're basically, cheap student housing from the 30s.
Located cheap student.
That's right, yeah. But they're not the sort of properties where, say, a Jerry Talon's going to come along and fall in love with it and pour $2 million in to fix it.
No.
Who did the Cheney House
on
Main Avenue.
Right.
We're by a parking structure in Euclid, and it's the historic potential.
No, I just wanted to clarify that.
So what Mike and his team analyzed the costs, and essentially they were looking at these were the payback periods, even without interest or carrying costs. They're seeing that it would just take decades to make income off of what would have to be done to bring these properties up to snuff. So we have asked for permission to take them down. This was our view from the neighborhood looking east, without the building, with the building. We feel it's in context. Now, to go back to the process of where we've been, reminding us again of our location, of our zoning limitations, 4 and 6 stories, we've seen that before, the context of the Geronimo, west-facing. Now, it's interesting, they dealt with the west sun by doing awnings to shade the glass. But again, at a certain point, the awnings aren't doing you any good, and if the awnings are deep enough to do you any good, you have no view. So that's why we essentially turn the awnings on their sides, and following what I learned at the University of Arizona from my professor. We were instructed, or requested rather, by the neighborhood and the historic to relate more strongly to the historic precedent. And they said, what elements in the neighborhood context would you reflect and respect and incorporate? So rather than doing a cantilever canopy along the walkway, we propose to do a colonnade, not an arcade.
That's a good idea, not to do an arcade.
Right.
From a retail standpoint.
Okay. Okay. Good. Well, our feeling was that in terms of the historic preservation standards, when you build a new building, you don't want to imitate the old, because then you would just confuse the historic record. So you let the old, you let the new be new. But we were saying, how do you do the signage for the retail? This is actually 4th Avenue, but it's a similar bay to the little existing storefront. We were saying, you have a regular kind of colonnade, you handle your signage on that. This is leaded glass to let in light but block the heat. We're proposing a set of aluminum louvers, you'll see on our design, that's picking up on these proportions. One thing we noticed, we received a request from the neighborhood. My concrete plinth structure was not a hit at the box office. The neighborhood asked if we couldn't use a warmer, more humid material, such as brick, which is associated with the university. So my client agreed to spend the extra money to do a brick veneer treatment. The first floor will be concrete. It has to be, because it's a pedestal building. And we're looking at light gauge steel framing above Worthington building systems to build the upper 4 or 5 stories. But we need to do concrete. We'll veneer it with brick. And I was looking at the brick in the area. There's this interesting brick detailing where you have some stack bonds, some soldier coursing, some Flemish bonds. We'd like to do something to relate to that. Another historic building is the church from 1948 by Art Brown, which has this sawtooth window pattern that we're also arriving at, using it a little differently. Mm-hmm. I happen to think Art did a sawtooth the wrong direction. He oriented so you get the west sun, but I think he was doing something else, actually. This is actually, believe it or not, one of my favorite buildings in Tucson. And not just because I went to Tucson High, but it's the Tucson High Stadium. What I love about it is it covers an entire city block with a covered arcade, and it's shaded. And when we met with, actually, your colleague, Richard Fay Tom, and I said that this is one of my favorite buildings, he said, "You're kidding." I said, "No, I'm really not. I really like it. I think it's great. I mean, if you put housing above and shops below, that could be great. In fact, this is what I wish they had done at the district, was a ground floor like this, then they could do their housing above. The other thing the district should have done is they should have had a bus pull out to get buses off the street. But anyway, that's water over the dam. So if you look at this, there's stack bond, there's soldier course, there's running bond. There's different kinds of brick patterning that add texture and richness to it. And there's my favorite saguaro again. And here's our revised design, just as a SketchUp massing model. We've stayed with the serrated west-facing wall. We've added columns to make it a more traditional building. And once you add columns, you can't really have these guys out on their own weaving in and out. I felt like I needed to embrace them more in a grid. This is that level of louvering that would replace the leaded glass that we saw on the old historic commercial. And we're holding our storefront back. This is actually the line at 60 feet from the front property line where we go to 6 stories. This is a view also showing the pool's been pulled over, reduced in size. We've wrapped our green roof around to keep folks away. This will help with our open space requirement for the main gate district. Also help with keeping the building cool with the green roof. Now we tried a couple of color schemes. We did red brick on the bottom course and lightweight metal above. And I should say a word about materials. We've been investigating an insulating metal panel. There's a number of brands. There's a Leukobond, there's Rainobond. But this is a high quality material. We're not wanting to use stucco. We want to do something that feels like quality, like university. So when we go with the red brick, you can't really do a red metal above it very well because they just clash.
Right.
They're too close together. So if we looked, for the neighborhood, stated a preference not for the white and gray scheme, but for the second scheme, which I'll show you. Okay, so there's the view of that. Oh, and there's some people in the pool who forgot to take their clothes off. I don't know, I guess just drop some people in the pool. This is a view of the covered arcade. Basically a window wall shaded by the aluminum louvers, and then this is showing red brick, although it's sounding like we will not do red brick. And then there's a planting buffer at Euclid, which currently, if you look, currently it's a sidewalk. there's a sidewalk, and no planting at all. And one thing the neighborhood also requested was additional landscaping. So here's our view showing the arcade of the Geronimo, and then our covered colonnade, our four-story building with our six-story building beyond. These are the drawings that you have at 11 by 17. And now the other thing we've done is we've picked up on that beveled hotel room above, and we've chamfered the corner of the building. So the building actually stops there above. That's the first of the rooms. And this is also beveled. This is at a 30, 60, 90. This is 60, 90,
30.
So
how far is that above grade, the bottom of that floor?
It's an 18-foot floor-to-floor height on the commercial bay, because we need a tall ceiling, as you know.
Gotcha. Right.
And then from there we go to 11-foot floor-to-floor.
Okay.
And we've held the retail back here, so it's shaded, the glass is shaded. We don't know how many tenants there will be. There might be one tenant, there might be three, there might be four, but you could lease and you could subdivide this for tenant improvements anywhere along these column lines. These stairs are coming down from the hotel above. These stairs are coming up from the garage below, located kitty corner. There's the garage level plan. The elevators come to the garage, of course. There's an exit stair. There's an exit stair. These are mechanical rooms for exhausting, pulling fresh air through the garage. Okay, here's our pavilion level plan. This is the second. We have conference rooms around the courtyard, hotel rooms on the perimeter. And you can see this serrated shape that gets set up by the saguaro concept. Here's our circulation coming through, We're able to have one hotel room here. When we go to the upper floors, okay, there's your typical floor from the third to the fourth. And then the fifth and sixth are like this. And here's the pool. Now since this, and actually this hasn't been updated to show the current configuration of the rooftop garden that we want to do. We may have a small serving kitchen here. For receptions, restrooms, and storage. And we've kept all the services along here, mechanical, linen rooms, elevators, since this is the parking structure and we don't want hotel rooms staring right at the parking structure.
And the lovely electrical.
That's right.
Transformer box.
There's a massive transformer for the streetcar.
For the streetcar.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So
live parts.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what the signs say,
live parts.
Live parts.
Yes. Yes. Skull and bones.
Okay.
Oops, sorry. So here is our west elevation showing a transition from brick to metal and stepping back beyond. That's the stair coming down. This is a detail, an enlarged detail of the typical colonnade. We're looking at using some stack bond brick, some running bond brick, and then here are the louvers, which further reinforce that serrated saguaro motif at a smaller scale. So at the pedestrian level, you have a finer texture to the building, and then above, it's a larger scale treatment of that same material. South elevation, at this point, we were showing only a single level of underground parking. We had been hoping to arrange to lease some spaces in the Tyndall Garage, but Dave Heineken said, forget about it.
Yeah, well, I would have said the same, because we just have no option.
Well, that's what we heard. Yeah. I mean, I'm clear, because I called him up and I said, oh, could I set up a meeting? He says, don't waste your time. We would never agree to that. So anyway, so we came back, and so on the drawings you have, there's a second level of parking shown. There's our exciting east elevation. These panels, of course, would continue. We're doing that ghosting away detail. And the north is similar to the south, except the windows look northeast. The windows look northeast towards Sabino Canyon. Because actually, if you look straight north, you don't have that much of a view. The other tall buildings kind of interfere with your view of the mountains. But this way, you'd be seeing north northeast. And the services are off the alley, of course. Here's a cross-section. There's the Tyndall Garage. Here's that narrow space. Oh, I should point out. Oh, yeah. Jane, that's the transformer right mm-hmm. there. Right.
Right.
It's a
live part.
It's as big as a boxcar. Cross-section showing five levels of parking. Here's our four to six stories. Now, this is of special interest for Rick, I think. When you read the details of the bulk reduction along Euclid Avenue, It actually reads that you can, the setback shall be 30 feet from the curb, which puts us here. You can go up 26 feet, at which point you have to step back 12. Then you can go up to your height of 56, and from there you go up to 84. Now, and one of our first meetings with Richard Faytom was to discuss, there's a condition of the main gate district which says that when best practices of urban planning would indicate otherwise, this could be amended. So we met with him and with Jim and with Frank Dillon, and we had a discussion that in the historic zone, the precedent is you honor the historic street alignment. That's how you create that urban feeling. So we proposed lining up with the Geronimo, and Richard Faytom agreed with that, that that was the better practice for urbanism. Because the whole purpose of the main gate district, of course, is to create an urban corridor, and if we start stepping, we end up with without that. So that's one place where we have opted for that best practices amendment.
The face of buildings, how far back from face of curb?
It is 11 feet to the colonnade, and then the colonnade is 10 feet deep. So the face of building is 21 feet
from face of curb.
Right, 21 feet, yeah. But the colonnade actually lines up with Geronimo. The Geronimo colonnade goes out to about 2 feet from the curb.
No, I know. Yeah, right.
So what we're actually doing is we're lining up our colonnade with Geronimo, and then we're lining our facade up with our 10-foot property setback. So there is a bit of a jog, which actually, I'll back up to the site plan, because I actually think that that amendment works for a number of reasons. See, here's that's our property right there, and there's the face of our building right there. So that's your 11 and 10. This is 11 feet from property, and then the arcade pops out like that. So our arcade, or not our, it's not really an arcade, there are no arches. Our colonnade lines up with the Geronimo.
Right there.
And then this bevel, where we follow our stair, actually improves site visibility for cars.
That's nice, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Opens it up. Because the current building that's there is built right at the corner. Mm-hmm. So that was where, you know, when a design gets to a point where things make sense for more than one reason, you suddenly go, well, maybe there's a real, you know, design happening here.
So you're farther back than the Geronimo.
We are.
And not as far back from the housing immediately to the south.
That's true. This housing is, I measured that, but it doesn't show up in this drawing. I believe we are where their garden walls are, because they're built up on kind of a terrace.
Yes.
And the first terrace, which is about 4 feet high, the terrace lines up with our front of our building. And then their building's another 8 feet back from that. So we're all kind of, this is sort of stepping like this, step, step,
step.
So it's stepping in plan. And then when you get to the new U of A housing, it steps back up.
Right.
So but there is sort of a recess there at the La Aldea housing.
Where is the original building set back in relation to that?
Excellent, excellent question. Let's see, I believe I have plan that I can hand you at the same scale that would show you that.
They could ask me to establish the setback to face a curve.
Here we go.
Original.
No, yeah, when we did the overlay zone.
Can you compare that?
That's what I'm saying. Originally,
they asked me to. I said, well, you want to go with me? And they said, no, we trust you, but we disagree with you.
Now, there is a wall on the property line, a 6 foot high wall. And then I think there another.
Yeah, there is, right.
So, yeah, we're actually not, I think.
We pretty much match the footprint.
I think we do, yeah. But the arcade's in front of it.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's right. Okay.
So in terms of the bulk of the building,
yeah,
it's basically there. So let's see, now I've got a 3D version of, we talked materials. This is a Luca bond. You can get all these various colors. One thing that I prefer is not to have it all monochrome. This is actually from Vanderbilt University, Tennessee. This is a Luca bond, gray and white. And you look at it, you know, it has a feeling of quality, like maybe it's stone or maybe it's, you know, some precast concrete or something. We're looking more in the warmer range of terracotta colors. And this is the mix that we're actually proposing, which would be russet, hazelnut, chipotle, and copper penny. This is our current rendering of our proposed building. And we would blend the pre-finished colors. There's a random pattern that they recommend to get, so it's not all monotone. We're proposing a lighter brick, kind of a beige or a rosy brick, and then the terracotta color in the metal, which also is sort of a rust, like a iron oxide type. And then we go back to cap the building, we'd go to a beige or a tan coping of metal. So this is from the south, and then we've added landscaping here, significant landscaping, and the entrance to the hotel would either be by streetcar through the Geronimo Court, or if you're driving, you come in off of 4th Street. And that is our concept, and that's where we are.
Hey, Jim. Can I ask a quick question before I respond? And I'm looking forward to it. I actually think it's good. Can you frame, again, since we've had different missions on different parcels and the like, so that we make sure that we're all focused on the appropriate type of input we're supposed to be giving for this location, this parcel. Could you real quickly just outline that for at least me, so that I'm certain that I'm on the right track when context.
This is the part of the Main Gate District where you're acting as an advisory body to the director. And your job is to make sure that the design criteria that are spelled out in the Main Gate are being met by this project. So Bob has given you kind of an overview here. Eventually, if we can say this kind of like a study session to get you familiar and up to speed with it, the next time he comes back, it would be nice if he had a slide and he showed us and walked through the design standards that he's supposed to be meeting. And that would be very helpful. His project is one of the more complicated ones because it is also in an H overlay, H historic preservation zone. So he's correct that what's coming out of here and what you're recommending would eventually make its way to the mayor and council when he is making his proposal for a demolition. And they're going to say, well, what's your replacement plan? Because he's correct. If the mayor council doesn't just approve a demolition, they approve a demolition and the replacement plan. So because this is in the Main Gate, he is trying to make a case that when he goes in front of mayor council, he can say, we use the Main Gate overlay, which we're allowed to do on this project. There are parcels in the Main Gate you can't, but this one you can. So in his replacement plan, he wants to say, I've met all the standards of the Main Gate and I've reviewed it with the design review committee, and I'm sure the director would feel very comfortable whatever you guys are recommending, that he would support that recommendation. So it's that's kind of the decision-making path you're following here. The issue, if I could just bring one other issue, I don't want to complicate this, but there is this issue of the major streets and routes. Euclid is a major street, and normally on a major street, you have to do a special setback because what the major street is saying is we may widen this road at some point in time on our major streets and routes plan. We show a specific right of way that is for the future right of way, and therefore we want you to set back your building on your property so that we can come in and buy your property to add to that right of way some point in the future. Now, recently, the mayor and council gave direction to staff on Euclid saying, we want you to come back to us with a plan amendment of the major streets and routes plan to keep Euclid from Broadway to Grant in an as-is right-of-way situation. Not widened. And the argument is the road system around Euclid has been widened and transformed, so it's the distribution of traffic is working as good as it's going to work. In the Euclid case, we don't need it to be widened. Okay. Not only that, you have all this historic amenities, assets along Euclid, that if you wind it, you'd have to wipe those out too. Okay. So they're trying to do that balancing act. Bob, his project and the plan amendment for Euclid may not be quite on the same level. There might be a point in time where he's going to have to make a decision with his client if they want to pursue their own plan amendment on the major streets and routes plan. That's an option open to them. But staff will eventually do that, but we're having to go through a much more longer public participation process than he may want to wait for. So that's kind of the context.
Great, that's helpful. Thank you. I can tell for me and maybe for others that are listening too. I'll start with a few thoughts.
Can I ask Jim a question?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, my question is about the referencing to the historic buildings. My understanding is that we're to use the Geronimo as our takeoff point because of its adjacent and only adjacent buildings. Is that accurate?
In the main gate ordinance, it talks about the adjacent buildings. So in this case, Geronimo Hotel would meet that criteria. That doesn't mean that you can't use across the street Euclid as kind of a point of departure too, but from the point of view of this, Geronimo is the main building you are trying to be in context with.
Yeah, that was a discussion that Noah was put when we did the overlay district.
And the level of historic context really is not something where there's a lot of standards. It's basically what is the comfort zone of the committee in making that determination.
If I may, I'm curious to hear a little more about what the Historic Commission said. And you did say that the architect on the board agreed with the design as it was going, but what was the general feeling from the commission?
Well, it was a controversial discussion, and the vote was split. It was 4 in favor of endorsing demolition and 3 opposed. So it was a close vote. But it was an extended discussion. We actually had 2 meetings with them. We came, and at the end of the first meeting, they weren't ready to decide. We came back for a second meeting, and these meetings went on for, you know, hours. They were full afternoon meetings. The direction was that they weren't supposed to decide the issue on the basis of an emotional attachment to historic buildings, but on the case that we made for the reasonable economic use. Not hardship, but reasonable economic use. And the decision, you know, was reached, the vote was made, and the results were reported. So
that was a city-county meeting.
That was the Tucson Pima Commission.
Not who's that?
Tucson Pima Commission actually voted once, and they voted against demolition. And then,
what were the objections primarily?
Well, they voted against, the first time they voted against demolition. And then Bob sort of said, come on, guys. You know, here's my argument, and then one of the members of the commission said they wanted to change their vote. One of the most bizarre. I sit in these meetings all the time, and I've never seen a vote. You know, someone after the vote's been taken, then
reconsider.
Well, I've never seen. First of all, I've never seen an applicant say, you know, basically take each committee member to task on their vote. And I've never then seen a re-vote of the same issue. So, you know, in terms of as the meeting was run, things I've never observed before at those meetings happened at that meeting.
I spent 2 years on that commission,
right.
So I'm familiar with it. But I'm just briefly, I'm just asking what beyond were the objections related to the integrity of the buildings? Were they simply because they're old buildings or?
Well, I take exception to some of what Noah said. I would disagree that I took each member of the commission to task. We had a discussion where there are 3 architects on the board, and they all agreed that the numbers were reasonable and that the case we made, you know, made sense. And then one of them voted against demolition, sort of kind of on an emotional level. And I said, wait a minute, I want to be clear about this. You agree that our analysis is correct, and you're still voting against us? And then he goes, oh. And he reconsidered. And he said, well, I want to change. He said, Madam Chair, to Terry Majewski, I want to change my vote. And it was Jean-Luc. So I think partly it was, and you know, the Historic Commission's job is to protect historic buildings, right? So they're extremely uncomfortable approving it. But when you focus on the issue at hand, which is the reasonable economic use and the redevelopment potential, it's a different set of criteria. I'm against, you know, destroying historic buildings, period. So that was the crux of the matter.
Noah, what was the WUZAP vote?
Well, and some interesting things came up at the WUZAP meeting, because we've addressed this site multiple times now. And I think the most interesting piece of information that came out at the West University Historic Zone Advisory Board meeting was that we asked about the previous owner, and when they come to ask for a demolition permit, they showed us their numbers, and they were bringing in substantially more income on the property in as-is condition than the present management team. And we asked, you know, what's the difference, and how come the previous owner was bringing in so much more money than you are? And the response was our management style, which to me says, you know, it's been intentionally managed to reduce income. And, you know, to present this argument of economic hardship, and as a contractor who specifically works on old buildings in Tucson, I've been restoring old structures. You know, we're working right now on a 1920 tuberculosis hospital, mud adobe, about an acre lot, 14 units. And for a total restoration, we're looking at a $400,000 budget of that site. You know, I see these numbers and I'm like, this is a Taj Mahal restoration. This is not a restoration to student housing standards or any kind of, this is to bring it to the same level as the Hub or some of the new construction that's going in. And I'm not sure that's a fair way of doing this.
Thank you.
I was just going to say, Rick, we've got legal action reports from those meetings that just to stay consistent, if you guys want to read those in the record.
Yeah, that'd be great. And I don't want to bring up too much that's already been discussed, but I just wanted kind of an overview of what the various thoughts were.
Does our committee consider that?
The historic element is part of the overlay in the MGD, but it's not, obviously, it's not the whole part of it.
It is not needed by you to do a historic analysis. This isn't the historic commission being repeated.
Correct.
The only thing that you're looking at from a historic point of view, and I'll try to find
it. Context.
Is context. Is this in a historic context? Have they met the design standards of the main gate?
And that's all I'm trying to
okay.
Right.
And you were trying to get the context of their discussions,
right.
too, for
right.
the purpose
so,
of
so as far as the HPZ issue is, your focus is more on the appropriateness of the replacement plan.
Yeah.
So these are the design.
And the design, right. The demolition is something you may have a view on, you can express it here, but it's really not part of your vote or your recommendation.
However, the demolition of the historic buildings definitely relates to the design and what's going to happen.
All right, so this is the legal action report. From the joint meeting 2014, Tucson Pima County Historical Commission Plans Review Subcommittee and the West University Historic Zone Advisory Board, Thursday, May 15, 2014, 4:04 o'clock in this room, in this library, Julie Valdez Main Library. Let's see. So, item two, staff explanation of UDC section 5.8.7, demolition review required. Jonathan Mabry from OIT and Frank Dillon from PDSD to briefly explain UDC section 5.8.7. and TPCC Plans Review Subcommittee and West University Historic Zone Advisory Board roles in establishing recommendations for demolition of historic resources in the case of no reasonable economic use. WUSAB Representative Val Little expressed the guidelines did not take into account the financial feasibility of a demolition proposal. Dr. Mabry explained the neighborhood guidelines are supplemental to the mandatory policies in UDC sections 5.8. They are meant to provide guidance but are separate from the UDC. Commissioner Stables from the Tucson Pima County Historical Plans Review Subcommittee questioned the subcommittee's ability to process economic feasibility. Staff explained that the deliberation is to take into account existing structures, economic use, not property at its highest and best use. West University Historic Zone Advisory Board representatives questioned whether the approval of the proposed demolition would set a precedent. Dr. Mabry explained that the merits of a proposal are analyzed on a case-by-case basis. Item three, presentation of proposed demolitions in historic preservation zone, 14 HPZ case 1420 for the case of no reasonable economic use. Sub-item A, HPZ 1420, 714 North Euclid Avenue, Vent, proposed demolition of existing contributing structures. Architect Bob Vent provided a description of design proposal and background of demolition proposal. Mr. Vent explained that the design proposal honors the historical setback and lets the new be the new and the old be the old. Mr. Vent also made a case that the buildings are cut off from the historic zone and not integral. He added that the loss of the subject structures does not diminish or adversely affect the integrity of the historic preservation zone. Developer Mike Golick presented projected costs and income of existing structures meant for rehabilitation. Sub-item B, West University Historic Zone Advisory Board discussion recommendations in motion. Mr. Sensabar asked how many historic structures have been demolished in West University. Dr. Mabry answered that more than 50 structures have been demolished since the establishment of the HPZ. West University Historic Zone Advisory Board representatives added that they prefer to see the proposals that preserved the historic resources. Mr. Sensabar added that every historic structure lost in an overlay is relevant and chipping away of structures changes the ratio of the historic preservation zone. Rehabilitation can be done incrementally. West University Historic Zone Advisory Board representatives asked for the development zone of the block. Dr. Mabry and Frank Dillon explained the boundaries of the development zone. West University Historic Zone Advisory Board questioned the necessary financial return on our property to justify demolition and new construction. Mr. Golick mentioned that he would consult a partner for further information. PDSD staff Frank Dillon read the demolition review required section in the UDC to express that a proposed change of use is not considered. Mr. Sensabar does not think an owner should always get a financial return to justify having a property. Dr. Mabry stated that the analysis of reasonable economic use is based on the financial analysis of the property and subject structure rather than the owner. Barbara Macri addressed that Mr. Vent about the surroundings of the property to include the Geronimo Court along with the parking garage and arterial. Mr. Vent agreed that the Geronimo Court is a great element and the front door. The West University Historic Zone Advisory Board members explained they could not, under any circumstances, advocate for the demolition of historic structures in an HPZ. Staff explained that under the circumstances where an applicant was making a case for reasonable economic use, it was within the charge of the West University Zone Historic Advisory Board and Tucson Pima County Historical Commission to make recommendations for approval or denial of a proposal, and that was not advocacy for the demolition of the structures themselves. It was simply an evaluation of the criteria provided by the applicant evaluated with the criteria outlined in the UDC section 5.8.7. Val Little motion to deny the demolition based on reasonable economic use. Motion was seconded. Motion passed unanimously 5-0. And then this is a lot more brief. Sub-item C, Tucson Pima County Historical Commission plans to be subcommittee discussion. Commissioner Waterfall asked the architects on the committee for their opinion of the rehabilitation costs. The architects agreed the projected costs are reasonable. Commissioner Stables states that the property is a residual part of the neighborhood. Commissioner Mirto asked Mr. Golick about the net profits in the first year after rehabilitation. Mr. Golick responded that keeping 50% of the original building to explore retaining historic status does not pencil out. Commissioner Chadwick questioned if the intent to purchase the property was for the demolition and therefore disregard the value of the historic structure. Mr. Golick agreed that the return would be better if demolished and set for new construction. There are 18 bedrooms total to lease in the existing structures. Commissioner Chadwick motioned to deny the demolition based on reasonable economic use. Motion was second. Motion passed 4-2. Commissioner Waterfall moved to reconsider the motion. Motion was seconded. Motion passed 6-0. Commissioner Cuisinier motioned to approve the demolition based on reasonable economic use. Motion seconded. Motion passed 4-3. And then the subsequent items are the proposal of the replacement plans and West University's vote on those and the Tucson Pima County Historical Commission's vote on those. And then there are subsequent meetings and legal action reports that reflect the Tucson Pima County Historical Commission's opinions and recommendations about the further iterations of the design proposal.
Thank you.
Now, did they, you know, having gone through this process where it's different, you know, different than this, which is isolated, so does Bob have to go back then with design to ask for approval or not approval to those two entities? You know, I've always, obviously, if you don't get approval, then you go to Mayor and Council for approval. That's the process. I'm just discussing the process. You receive approval, which we always have, then, you know, you get a letter of approval, and then when you go for your permit, you exhibit your approval with your plans. So what's the process?
The ideal situation is that what the other two entities, and in this case it's mainly the commission, because they're like you, they're an advisor to the director,
right,
that what they recommended for the replacement plan should be substantially the same rendering that you would be approving. If you make a major change here, if you ask for something that was never brought up to them, I think we would advise Bob, you need to go and show that to the commission, because both the commission, the historic commission, and the DRC should be coming from the same page when you go in front of mayor council. We shouldn't be going in front of mayor council and saying, this particular picture is from the commission, and this one's from the DRC.
Yeah, make, you know, your choice.
I think, you know, we haven't ever done this before.
I know,
so
no, I'm not being facetious.
This is all new, but I think we do want to have a consistent recommendation from the advisory group.
At the end of the day.
Right.
Okay,
but it sounds like Mr. Vent responded to a lot of their things that were brought up.
But you're suggesting that we should go, it should go back to that advisory board.
If we make
a significant change.
Right. I think what Bob has shown you is what he showed to the historic commission.
Right, on the 26th of June.
But so, you're coming back with another design, you said earlier on.
Well, that was it. They saw that on the 26th of June.
No, about to us.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll be back to you for
you
sure.
Tweak it. You're saying you're tweaking it.
We'll definitely be back to you, because there's a lot of, you know, detail yet.
Right.
Yeah, we don't have everything.
The last version we saw, though, could you leave that up, that last
one? Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was because that's a good talking slide. So that version, though, that has or hasn't been seen by the other groups?
This was seen on the 26th of June by the Tucson Demon Commission, and they endorsed it.
Okay.
So.
And who's that was there? Right.
I don't know that Ruzef was there on the 26th.
I'm not sure if any representatives were there.
So. Okay, so that wasn't the joint meeting that Noah referenced?
No.
Okay.
There were two previous joint meetings. So I was not sure.
So just some comments on the design and the framework of how it's responding to its location, how it's related to understanding of the overlay district requirements and design issues for this place and time. I think that there's an awful lot of what you presented and described that makes a lot of sense to me from a design standpoint. I think that I spent some time with Chafee as well, and I think that she gave you good advice. I think that an approach like this to this west facade makes a lot of sense. I might think that a south northwest exposure of the windows might be less heat gain than the southwest exposure. But at any rate, I think that there's you made a good presentation. We saw the whole site, which is something that we didn't always have. In previous presentations, we saw a lot of context and understanding of the evolution of this thing, and I appreciate that. I think that drawing upon the building line, setback line of Geronimo makes sense. I think that this is an appropriate urban response. I think that it's very valid to draw upon university elements in this proximity to those other elements. I don't think that this is outscaled in this kind of an urban environment. I think that there are a lot of things that you did well. I like the approach to providing shade for a good part of the day with a colonnade, but still it doesn't hide the retail that's going on behind it. And I think that there's a real benefit to having some transparency to the building on the ground level. And I think that there's a good pedestrian experience waiting to happen. I like the way that you put the lobby off of Euclid and what seems to me to be a reasonable place. I appreciate that there appears to be enough parking for this facility to prevent overflow that can have some negative consequences. I think that it's great that the pool's pulled back. That's an issue we've had in the past, a possible misbehavior around the edges of the parapets, and I would hope that there's something to actually prevent folks from getting into the green roof area that would defeat that good design move. So I also appreciate the lack of stucco on this building. I think that Luca Bond product is excellent. I think that it's going to have a completely different, better, and longer lasting impression from just about every angle that it's viewed. I think that in this context, the brick veneer around the pedestrian level makes a lot of sense. I think that just from a aesthetic standpoint, this is just my thoughts, that the intensity of the color that you're presenting on above the walkway seems pretty bright to me and pretty intense. And if you look at the buildings around it, I see more of a pastel approach to selecting colors. Like if you look at Geronimo, you know, they have a tile roof, but it's not the intense color that you are showing here. And I think if you look at the buildings to the right, we have some brick, and then we have some of the more pastel cream kinds. I think as you look around the site, you'll see that.
And I agree.
And I think this would be a more successful building if it didn't.
We got it pretty close, didn't we?
You did. It didn't quite jump off the page like that when you're going down the street, if it was more of a citizen with the other buildings, especially since there are historic buildings in direct proximity that we don't want to completely overwhelm.
It is a little overpowering.
It is interesting. The neighborhood expressed a preference for the darker color rather than the
lighter. Well, I think they wanted a rich color, which might be slightly different because the scale of the building and the red.
We're going to have to order it.
Those are just my thoughts.
No, I agree with you, Bob.
You can do custom colors in Luca Bond. This is their standard.
But they may have something that's just one-toned.
Yeah, what I would be inclined to do, because I'm not sensing or hearing that anyone wants this to be
a monument building
or something that you draw from the palette of the colors of the buildings around you. That might allow this to be.
I wouldn't go towards turquoise.
Okay.
Well, how does that finish appear? You know, in sunlight, is that like an eggshell? Like, you know, paints have a variety.
Yeah, here's an actual sample of it.
So is it just one finish that you can get? It says gloss level 30.
Right. Yeah.
Can reduce.
Yeah. Here again, I think that's where we probably want to stay. We don't want a real reflective thing like a. You know, these all tend to be gloss level 30.
So perhaps the gloss level could be reduced?
Or if the gloss is, I don't think the gloss is the color is really.
I've probably said enough about it. I just think that if you drew more from the color palette of the facilities around it, so it doesn't overshadow, especially Geronimo and some historic stuff.
What I was thinking was, in a way, we're kind of reversing the color scheme.
You are a little bit.
Because they have the terracotta.
Yeah.
And we've got the brick would be a terracotta material, but it would be more of a stucco color. Looking in the range, maybe this one here, the dusty rose, that would go with one of these. Because that's sort of a pinkish cast, and the Geronimo is pink. Or rose-colored, but I agree this is a little harsh.
Yeah.
And if we could find,
I'll look it over and see what you think. And I, that's pretty much my thoughts. I think that it's a nice job.
So what happens on the north elevation?
Okay, let's see.
Have to think about what people see. I mean, I can.
As they get out of the garage, other cars in the garage.
No.
On the north, I saw
as they come
the
out of the Geronimo courtyard and they approach your hotel.
The windows are canted to the northeast.
Right,
so
that's the Sabino look.
Yeah, so from the west, you'd actually be looking at solid panels, but they're canted. They're
right.
at a 30-degree angle.
It's going south. I think that's what Jane said.
I'm asking,
she's going
south.
Directly
south.
Going from university towards the lobby.
From university
she's standing
to your
in
building.
The, in yeah. the courtyard of Geronimo and then looking directly south. What is she going to
yeah,
see?
Yeah, this is the view you would have.
You would right. see a slice of that because Geronimo will right. obscure some of what's on the right. Right.
Yes. You'd have a lobby.
Correct.
This would be the hotel lobby entrance, which would be largely
yeah,
glass.
I didn't see any of that stuff on the right, hardly.
And the, yeah, this you wouldn't see. The Geronimo
right.
would block this.
Right.
What I need is a site section.
I need a site section.
Okay.
If, just
is,
for me
that
to
is
understand
your feature
it
entrance.
In the step outside.
That is, you know, the right. image, the brand you're trying to create
yeah.
right there.
It's your front door.
The view from the Geronimo Court.
Yeah. Well, I'm not seeing...
Express entry.
Is there any
that's right.
relief from the building there? I can't tell.
Well, yeah, this has a depth to it because it's three-dimensional.
At the first floor.
Okay, what this is showing actually is an open drive-through that we're likely
okay.
not to retain.
Because you
okay.
have to turn around and go back.
Right, because the problem with our site plan now, and we've been getting advice, you know, from Curtis Lewick on how to handle the traffic. Let me go to the site plan here. Okay. You don't really, if someone's coming to stay at the hotel and they want to come and drop someone off and then go park, you don't really want them to have to go out and drive around the block to get back into your garage.
And probably not through that alleyway.
And you don't want to dump more cars in the alley.
Yeah,
right.
Delivery trucks, everything.
We have everything there.
Right.
So what I think we'll be able to do is to take this sidewalk, which goes right into the Geronimo, and bring it straight across and carry some special paving across.
Mm-hmm.
And then that becomes the entryway. So the lobby ends up here, and this would become a car turnaround and back this way, and then if you're going to the garage, you go down here.
Yeah.
Okay.
So everything is in and off of 4th Street. Nothing's thrown out of the alley. Because I could see where if something was on the alley, right now the alley's two-way, even though it's not wide enough to be two-way.
Yeah.
And we met with the city transportation folks, and they said, well, it's an existing condition that we're not going to reverse, you know, because trash and recycling goes up and down that, and cars
delivery trucks, bobtails are all.
But that's where we want them to go.
We
as
may
opposed
find
to on university.
Where it's pinched down here by this, these are the posts that support the exit stair. We may find that we need to slide our building over a little bit to
yeah.
make more clearance here.
Right.
And that we actually can accommodate that. These two rooms ended up being extra wide.
Just on the corner.
Just on the corner here. Across from Geronimo. So I think if we have to scoot this over, we can without interfering with the
car. Are you
going to
have valet service at the lobby?
Yes.
That whole operation requires some room, some space.
But it won't be in the alleyway, will it?
Yeah.
Where will it be?
Off
the court. Yeah, in the lower courtyard.
Down there.
Yeah.
So this will basically become a big
Yeah, so somebody that's coming to your hotel for the first time, and they are looking for the front door to go in and register. Are they gonna know clearly that they should come in the back and not come in around the front?
They will.
That's a little tricky, so.
Yeah, it is definitely an issue.
Yeah, they'll be coming off 4th Street. Now the address.
Our minds are kind of
right.
skewed to go to the front door.
Right.
And that's where I get out and go. You know, at a hotel and go
yeah.
in and
where you walk in the
lobby.
The
only thing
is,
maybe we want to extend a marquee out here to come out where the entrance to the garage is.
My interest is, you know, is not so much in your financial making it work. My interest is not having confusion to where people are suddenly, oops, they're backing up, they're going the other way, or you have people driving into the alley thinking they're going to the front door when that's not where they're supposed to be, and suddenly you have double the traffic because people are going places twice.
Circling the block.
Right.
So your address is 714 North Euclid. Is there a way to request an address that's different?
Mm-hmm.
I know the county addresses things.
You can request the 4th Street. They could request the 4th Street address and abandon
which
the
from a GPS, I know because of the name and all that, but the GPS
yeah.
would get them there then. See, a GPS takes them to 714 Euclid, they're going to be parked out on Euclid.
I think this discussion brings up one of my concerns, which is the 120 plus feet of consistent face on Euclid. And I think the main gate guidelines said that it had to be broken up every 85 feet. or something along those lines. And if you broke up that front facade and put an entrance in to your parking through the building there, it would solve all of these problems, because then you could have your Euclid address and people could access it from Euclid. My other concern is the massing of this structure. You know, you look at it compared to the Dronimo, and I don't see a transition zone. I see a huge structure dropped right on Euclid. And I think that your best practices argument, really the original design guidelines with the stair stepping coming in, helps with that transition. And this, there is no transition. You know, the Geronimo provides transition. It's a lower building than the things that are further back in the block. Here we're creating a massive wall on Euclid. And this then leads to my next query, which is, I was recently at a Tucson Pima Historic Commission meeting where you were talking about a dormer window you created that overlooks a neighbor's backyard and how this totally detracted from that neighborhood. And here we're creating a series of dormer windows that overlook everyone in the neighborhood's backyard. And how do these two positions jive with each other?
Okay, let me find the street elevation, which I think is a better drawing. The thing with a perspective, of course, is things vanish in perspective. So, you know, if my hand is here, it's one size. If it's here, it's another. So,
I was recently in the Sheraton looking down at this building from a really nice distance away and looking at the heights. It gave me a totally different appreciation.
The Sheraton. Isn't that what that is?
You were thinking like maybe you'd ingress off of Euclid and then egress off of 4th, something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Circular, so that people, when they went to Euclid, they got to Euclid.
Right.
And then they would break up that.
When they left, they just took out off of 4th.
A couple of things. A lot of points were raised there that are very good. One thing the Geronimo does is it starts out as a two-story building and it ends up as a three-story building because the street slopes quite a bit from University South to 6th Street. And it's three stories here. What I think I need to do, I need to drop our building into this perspective. For example, that's a nine-story building, right? But as it vanishes in perspective from your point of view at University, it doesn't appear as large because it's further away in your field of vision. So I actually think there is a transition. It's just that I think the perspective that we chose, which was showing you the two public faces, showing you the 4th Street and the Euclid Street, Euclid Avenue faces, let me find the street elevation. When we look at the street view to scale.
I think that having this perspective would be helpful. I think it might also be helpful to have an elevation of the whole block so that you,
right,
you know, like, that's, yes, a little too small to,
okay,
to get it. That's more of a diagram, you know.
Right, yeah, this is to scale. We went out and field measured all these things. And here's, you can see, University is quite a hump. And then this is 2nd Street, which is also a wash. It's the 2nd Street wash in a big rain, it runs. And there's actually an amazing amount of, there's like from Euclid down to 6th Street, it drops about 16 feet. Along our site alone, there's 4 foot of change in grade. So it's diminishing. So this is transitioning 3 stories, 4 stories, 6 stories. And then this is a mix of 3 and 4 stories. This is 4 to 9. And this is 6 stories and 5. So maybe what I need to do is get this drawing plotted at a large scale. Maybe. And
make it so that we can tell what's on the street. Because seeing something that's set back at a certain height doesn't give us the impression of what the streetscape's doing.
Right. Because you wouldn't really see.
Yeah, it's hard to envision exactly what the streetscape elevations are doing there with.
Now, in terms of the massing of the building, if you look at the Geronimo Hotel, you know, it isn't broken up. It doesn't go over 80 feet and then step back. You know, it doesn't comply with the design standards.
It wasn't built to comply with
the design standards.
No, it was grandfathered.
Yeah, it does establish a precedent, which is when you do a building, it could be a simple building.
It also establishes a height precedent.
True. Yeah, quite true. Yeah.
I think one of the reasons that I asked about the north view was I didn't see the step down.
Yeah,
I kind of expected to see on the north side.
I really needed to take a perspective.
Or even a step back. I don't know which, I mean, I think either would give relief.
Okay.
And then just if there's a pedestrian element on that north side, I think was my other question.
Let's see. Let me go to slide sorter.
That's a really good point. I didn't think of that.
Now, actually,
visualizing people walking in the alley. And trucks,
well, only if Bob helps me make the repairs that are necessary under.
Which repairs are those?
For the alleyway you want.
Oh.
I want to know which Bob.
Yeah. The one to my left has no money. I know that. So
he's got new stairs.
Those are mine.
We talked to the university about getting some improvements there. I know there's the power lines that come down where the mailbox comes in. There's some stuff that's some safety hazards as a pedestrian where a lot of people do that. I'd be willing to address those.
One thing I'm noticing is this is not the most current version of this plan. If you look at the version that you have in paper, we've indicated landscaping in this area. This would be planted.
Yeah.
And so your pedestrian experience is you're walking along the Geronimo, and this is paved from curb to building face. So
right.
These are existing ramps.
Yep.
And at this point, the current sidewalk has been removed and replaced with planting. Mm-hmm. We'd have some trees, some small canopy trees, and then we'd have some shrubs, some accent shrubs between them. We're looking at just a regular spacing of trees and a regular spacing of the colonnade.
I was asking about the north.
North.
Oh, like right in
here. Yeah, well, yeah. All the way from the corner going east.
What, is there a pedestrian feature at the one-story level?
The potential of a lot of people walking in that alley with the trucks and so on and not being able to walk off the alley.
Oh, I see.
I think that's what Jane's saying.
We need a sidewalk along here.
Or
maybe ties into the other sidewalk.
Site plan we talked about, it would step back, it would connect, because someone did park in the park garage, they come down the stairs, that's your correct access.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it would be between the transformer and the big machine, but it would be open all the way through on our site.
Okay. Sure.
Along that north face.
That's a good point.
Right. Yeah.
So that gets really narrow with those posts there on the left and with...
You
could be dodging some traffic when you're walking through.
I think we probably want to emphasize the pedestrian on Euclid, basically in front of Geronimo or to our site, and then not so much taking down the alley, but then making more pedestrian-friendly the connection to the actual courtyard parking garage to our site.
Well, I think that's what you're doing, and so I'm fearful that the north doesn't look as pretty as it could for that particular.
Because that's a backdrop for your little plaza area there now.
Right, and then.
Well, let me. I'll take some
safety
news from the north, because we can, by having taken all the measurements that we have, we can set the height of the SketchUp that we use at an actual reference point. For instance, we use the 30-foot height of Geronimo to set up the height of the perspective that you see, and we know the height of the garage. And we know the height of Geronimo, so we can set our SketchUp in at the actual height. So
So we're at the way it was zoned is 40 in front, right? Help me out.
It's
so many heights in my head.
Four stories not to exceed 56 feet.
50, so it's 56 in the front.
Right.
Okay, and the Geronimo is what, 28 feet?
The Geronimo is 30 feet. To the underside of the mansard. Then the mansard goes up another 5 feet.
So it's 35 feet.
35 feet.
Okay. Bob, the facade facing Euclid, how long is that?
Okay, what we're proposing is that we follow our property line the same way that the Geronimo does. So this is 45 feet, and I believe, let's see, the next is 143. So, but I would suggest or offer that this facade has been broken up by its serrated nature.
It has. I agree with that. He doesn't have a flat building like we've seen on the other presentations. And I think that's what the ordinance addresses. In this case, the whole building is, you know,
perforated.
Well, yeah. Just for the record, so, because I think Mel brings out a good point here, and I think it, you know, you have to have a response for this, is in C19U, it says any building over 85 feet long must be articulated in order to appear as a series of buildings no longer than 85 feet each along the front property line.
And I don't think this does that.
It's not a series of buildings.
It's one continuous crenellated building.
Which I would suggest is a good thing. You know, we don't want it to look like old Tucson with like a Western storefront stuck here. And, you know what I'm saying? It's like certain buildings are better if they're just simple and.
I think then
that lineal footage is 85.
What it says, I'll read it again here. It says any building over 85 feet long must be articulated in order to appear as a series of buildings no longer than 85 feet each along the front property line.
Right. Okay.
So if, you know, one case is he's doing that. Another case is he's not doing that, but this is an example of where something like that doesn't work, and it's a best practice, as long as Bob would show and come back to us with evidence that, okay, we understand, City of Tucson, what you're trying to get at here. You don't want a blank wall or something that looks like that. Why is this an acceptable option to the rule of C19U?
So our length is how much, 125?
143. So we're 50 feet over. But again, you know, the Geronimo next door is a similar length. It's a full half block. It's actually 200 feet long, and it's one building.
Right, and that to me may make it more challenging that yours does the same thing, because then you have what I consider to be a big.
But that's sort of,
you're saying 350 feet instead of.
But that's sort of the, you know, how cities get built. You know, it's like in Greenwich Village, you know, there's four-story buildings that line both sides of the street, you know, and you get this scale set up, and there's a consistency of rhythm of, you know, materials, and it's kind of great, you know. And
but therein lies the rub, Bob, is that in this neighborhood, there will never be a four-story building on the other side of that street. There will always be a one-story building on the other side of that street, unless, you know, we lose enough of the historic properties in this building that there is no longer an HPZ, which is definitely the way we're going. But
I would
for
disagree.
The present time, well, there are only 630 some odd historic buildings. We only need to go, well, that's, and we need at least 50% of the buildings have to be historic in order to be an HPZ. And there are only about, I think another 30, 40 buildings will lose the HPZ status, and you're proposing to tear down
27%.
Quite a few of them. You see, it's of the entire building stock. It's not the four out of, so.
It's a whole building inventory within the district.
Right.
Right.
So, and we have a lot of buildings already that aren't historic, so.
Although again, I think to protect the historic neighborhood, you could always, you know, realize your boundaries.
But
I know you lost a lot along University, those old buildings that were along University.
That's what got the historic building in place. That was the catalyst for the HPZ.
I didn't work there. Just last night.
Well,
but the issue is, as you said, you know, Greenwich Village has four-story buildings on both sides of the street. We won't have four-story buildings on the opposite side of the street. We have one-story buildings on the opposite side of the street, so the reference is one-story buildings, not a wall of four-story buildings. And what you're proposing is a huge, you know, 140-foot long, not in code with the guidelines, super tall, again, not stepped as the guidelines dictate, right on the street, right across the street from one-story buildings. And I just don't see how this meets the guidelines, or, you know, either in letter of the law or intent.
So a couple thoughts along those lines. I think that this is a unique situation that we have. I think that this is an edge condition where an urban environment is across the street from a historic residential area. I think
this is historic. This site is historic.
May I go on, please?
Okay.
And I think that there's some good case to be made for responding to some of the urban elements that are around the this project that are university buildings and other facilities. I think that there's a good amount of density that's occurring on this block. I think that there are several elements though that we are looking at that have to be considered that are a part of the Main Gate District overlay, and that we can't just brush them all aside without having a real dialogue about it. And I think that you're probably coming back to discuss some of this design issues with us. And I think that there's already a step back element that is being presented as doing something different. And I understand your rationale and can appreciate that. But there's also then the horizontal articulation requirement that also is right now being ignored. Maybe that's a little too much, you know, considering that we do have a very strong interest, stakeholders across the street and throughout this historic residential area that clearly would like to see something different happening here. Now I happen to appreciate the urban design qualities of this, but I think this is a serious question that can't be just pushed aside. I think that considering doing something that would respond to some of these requirements that are intended for all the buildings in this district might be a wise thing to do, and it might be a considerate and appropriate thing to do in this situation. I don't have the answers. You know, there's another issue that is around here about, you know, where's the front door, where's the valet drop-off, where's your address, and there have been a couple of suggestions, and one was that there might be an articulation coming off of Euclid for an entry. Who knows? These are some issues, I think, that need some more thought and some more clarification and presentation back to have this whole group feel comfortable with it. That's just a...
Okay, well, let me give you some thought. One thing is in the total three-dimensionality of the site. Number one, it's a small site. You know, it's basically a quarter of a city block, mm-hmm. because we're south of the alley,
yes.
east of Euclid, north of 4th. The Tyndall Garage takes the east half. So it's not that big a site in terms of buildings. The massing of the building, because of the central court, you do have that sense of smaller volumes that you would see from the distance. It wouldn't look like one mm-hmm. massive structure from the neighborhood. In terms of the intent of the code to reduce the bulk of the building, I think that the surface treatment, or the three-dimensionality of it, would achieve that. And making one building look like two different buildings is not really what you want to do in terms of creating a unified image of your property. You want it to feel like one place because it is one place. So I think, in that sense, the use of it as a hotel to try to make it look like two different buildings would be at cross purposes to the idea of creating an identity. So I think let us study that, yeah. and we can look at the...
Appreciate our position. You know, we have this overlay district code that our job is to enforce unless there's great reasons not to, and I think that what you just began to do is an approach that helps to say this is what, you know, it was the objective that was created, that we didn't create, but it was created, and that we're supposed to be enforcing, and this is... Yeah. This is how why it was created to do this, and this is why in this case maybe we should consider something else.
And it was Bob is historically just to follow up on what you said, you know, so involved with my friend at the end of the table here, and with West University neighborhood that really, as Noah pointed out some of that, part of that was where it was really when it became. An item and then decided on was basically because of the face, what you would see in the fascias of the Main Gate Overlay District. So this is obviously a fascia and it faces right to the neighborhood. And it also was involved on Speedway, you know, and that's why it was developed, the language was developed, because then that faces, you know, another neighborhood or as the face of the neighborhood when you're going down Speedway. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have this wall. So that's just historically, you know, as far as when this was developed, that's how it got developed with the West University neighborhood, as far as when those guidelines were put in. And the other thing, and I'm not making any judgment on the fascia of the building, Bob, but you mentioned that to Noah, and I'm very familiar with Greenwich Village. My daughter just moved out of the West Village to Bowery and Fourth today. Recent graduate, and living, working in New York. But, you know, a lot, when you look at down at those four-story buildings, and they're on both sides of the streets, when you're looking at the building below, there's a lot of entrances in those buildings, you know, along the way. So it really is, it's a whole different feel when you're facing the face of the building, you know, in Greenwich Village. So I just point that out.
That's a bad analogy. You know. I withdraw the analogy.
Right.
Well, I think there's a practical retail and pedestrian friendly thing that breaking up your path line creates. So even if it weren't design, it might be great for us to make Euclid more pedestrian friendly.
Like shading half a block.
Because that is a good thing, but there's other the landscape that you're adding, but there's also interest that has to be added, that because the Geronimo Hotel is the historic building it is, and it's not being torn down.
That's long and linear.
It's long and linear that we might need you to do something slightly different to break that block up. Because
see, that's where, in terms of like the best practices in urbanism, breaking blocks up is not necessarily the best thing. So that's why I think I'd make that appeal.
Maybe I'm saying it wrong because I'm not an architect, but creating places to go into that don't look all the same, I guess.
It appears that on the first level there are two indentations at the exits.
And that depends on where those doors go. They could all be identical. But I think in some ways this colonnade may create some of the longness, the feel of longness.
Which to my mind is a great thing. I said, wow, I get to walk for a block out of the sun. That's great.
Well, you could break them up, though, too. I don't know. You're the designer.
Yeah.
You're good.
I hope, though, that you can see the challenge we have.
Should have 10 feet here.
You know, we have a number of interests in this group, and we do have the responsibility to enforce this. And when we go away from it, it needs to be for great reasons that are well delineated, that the other view of why what was intended is actually achieved better by doing this instead, and that's not happened yet. And there's obviously a discomfort around the table with both vertically and horizontally, you know, exceeding what are clear guidelines for a purpose of trying to prevent long expanses of walls, you know, along
the faces of the
area. So, you know, I know you can solve this. It's just a challenge for us to say no problem, no problem, no problem, when we actually are responsible to enforce something, unless there's wonderful reasons not to, you know, and we may have different views about those initial rules, but I think that we need to make sure that we do what we're responsible for here and looking at them.
Can I make a couple statements? One, you know, on the facade that's looking towards the West University neighborhood, you have the articulation of the angled windows, which increases costs on our behalf. Yeah, I think it does show some respect for the neighborhood. It's not looking direct, parallel, straight on with
it's not a flat wall.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
It's added relief, but it's also trying to create somewhat of privacy that you have a different scale.
I think that there's some points for that. Yeah. It's not a flat wall, but there is still an expansive plane. So, there's...
And then the other side, I think you bring up a good point of entry. I definitely believe in human nature and how we all respond. People do need a point of direction or they'll never get there. So I think something can be done. We did meet with the city engineers as far as the plaque, the planning, as far as egress and vehicle egress and in and out of the site, and we did hire a traffic engineer. I'm neither of those, so we left it up to them. We had several entries coming off Euclid Direct, and we studied a lot of the things they felt with the, there's a a right turn lane that goes into 4th Street. 4th Street is very wide. There's a right turn lane out of there that you can go left or right. So it seemed to be the best entry. It still doesn't resolve, I think, that point of entry.
It's a complicated site. You know, you've got, you know, the off of 4th is almost like you're competing with a garage entrance.
Yeah.
You know, and off the alley is, well, you know, that's skinny, and that's not a place where you have cars and you have service, and that's complicated. So it's really challenging. You know, if there were a way you could bring them in through from Euclid and have your address really work and break up the mass of the building all at one broad stroke, you know, maybe it's something worth considering. I don't know. I can't.
Would it be helpful to have Curtis Luke here in the next meeting, traffic engineer, to address any of those issues? As far as the site plan?
I don't.
Probably.
I don't think so.
All we need is something from the traffic.
I think you could tell us what they think is needed, unless there's a decision that needs to be made based on your continuing discussion with them after today that you think there'd be a dynamic quality to them being here.
Yeah, help me out, Bob. Is there a turn? I should know, right? I'm on that street all the time. But is there a turn lane in the middle of Euclid?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a curb cut into our site that we
could. Right, but I mean, is there there's the turn lane at that point?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so far enough away from the University Euclid intersection, far enough south.
There's a bundle of issues here. Yeah. There may be some really creative
way to
let them work together. I just don't. It's hard.
Yeah.
This is a tough one. And you've been, you know, it's tough because you've been struggling with it from the beginning.
Well, one issue we learned from the city traffic engineers was that they have rules about the spaces between curb cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. you're supposed to have 300 feet, and we don't. That's more than our whole site.
Yeah.
So we could use the existing one.
You could.
But we couldn't move it. Because if we move it, it's new.
Where's the fall exactly?
It comes right in here.
What happened to be right in the middle of the bay?
It's not. of course not.
It's 20 feet over from the 10-foot setback.
Yeah, it would actually come right through this column. This way. Now, the other thing is, if we were going to have a right turn in, we would want to allow cars to get out of traffic, slow down, and turn.
Right.
And we'd lose that landscaping. So, I mean, it's like you'd give something up in order to get something.
Is there a right turn lane into the garage entrance on 4th?
Yes, there is.
There is a recessed one.
So maybe that's, you know, maybe.
And maybe we just need more viewpoints, and it'll help us really.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? You don't have a complete package here that we're used to looking at.
Maybe you want the feel of the front door and all the expression to say it's a front door to be off of 4th, maybe a little closer to the visual expression closer to Euclid, so that that garage entrance is pretty well recessed and then
change the address.
And then maybe, I don't know. I know you've gone through all this before, haven't you?
We've
probably done this several times.
We've looked at it. Yeah, just
tried it.
There doesn't seem to be a perfect solution. So.
No, there never is.
Could you go back a couple slides to the colonnade?
Let's see. This one? Oh, I'm sorry. That's
Tucson High Street.
That's Tucson High, which is too long.
it really kind of is.
It is.
Although it's your favorite building.
It's so great. Like, what if we had built more of Tucson like this? We could walk all over the place.
The concept of a covered walkway is a great concept.
Yeah. Like in Bologna, in Italy, they have 26 miles of covered walkway, and it's great. And
they have a little bit of a different approach to how they develop the facades of the building. So.
That shot that you had looking south of Understrom.
Is that the one I wanted?
Yeah, you had a good slide up there looking south.
The north elevation.
Okay, right here?
Right there.
Okay.
Right there. Jay mentioned a little earlier that Euclid is not particularly pedestrian friendly. There's not much reason to turn a corner and walk south on Euclid here, but if it was done right, I don't know what you call it, a colonnade or whatever you call it, to draw people, if there was a destination, your retail or something back there, it would add to the panache of the main gate square.
You'd brave that stretch if you knew there was something on the other end with shade to get to.
Right. Otherwise, you've got this huge volume of traffic that you really don't want to.
But it's west facing.
But the colonnade is lined up with the building, correct?
Yes. Exactly. The front of the colonnade would be But then we'd have a landscape buffer here.
Right, no, I know that.
Which could help diminish.
That's really going to soften it up.
Yeah, it would diminish the heat and the dust and the fumes and all that.
But I would turn a corner from University and I would walk down there if there was some reason.
Something worth going to.
Yeah, a restaurant or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Bob, you're caught between two things here. Obviously, you like that nice uniform look, and it provides something of amenity of pedestrian comfort by having a shaded walkway. That's a definite positive. I don't think anybody disagrees. But in the code, it is saying there's these 85 point. It wants this breakup because there's this concern about monotony. You also, the code, realize that there may be solutions to problems that are outside the standards here that the committee would accept if they had a body of evidence that said, you know, other people have done this. But I still think where this is going is some kind of variation needs to be added in there to kind of make it feel a little less uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, the qualities of that uniformity that you are trying to protect that are actually positives should be kept in some fashion.
Well, the other thing, it's part of the result of the program. You know, a hotel is a repetitive program. You have so many rooms that are same size,
definitely.
And you want to have an efficient circulation. Mm-hmm. And you just, you know, buildings like to be modular.
You're talking about the interior now. It's part of the program. Yeah,
right. But like this building, you know, this building is a simple building that just does its thing. You know?
So maybe a question is, can you preserve all those great qualities and all of those elements that you have going on and find a way still to give some gesture back to the requirements that have been developed through a real painstaking process and approved by a lot of folks and that would let us feel really great about going forward with something that's primarily intact but doesn't just completely ignore the things that we're supposed to be considering on behalf of the neighborhood and the entire community.
Fair enough. We have more homework to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, thanks for your input and observations, and appreciate your consideration.
So. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
That's a nice project.
Thank you.
Is there anything else anyone would like to say from the audience? No. All right, I believe we can adjourn.
Move,
second.
Okay, this meeting is adjourned, 4:05 p.m., Thursday, July 31st.
Less than 2 hours, just like it was supposed to.